Dear Cheap Astronomy, how bad is gender bias in space? In a perfect world, special consideration of women in space would be unnecessary. There would just be consideration about generic humans, where we might ponder a range of physical differences. So, for example, the shortest astronaut in space was Peggy Whitson at 1.6 metres, the first female commander of the International Space Station, and the tallest astronaut was Jim Weatherby at 1.9 metres, who managed the most space shuttle landings, five in all. The youngest astronaut was German Titov at 25 years old, and the oldest astronaut was John Glenn at 77 years old. But of course, we don't live in a perfect world. It is the case that women are substantially underrepresented in the astronaut population, making up just 10% over the history of human spaceflight, though things have been improving lately, with women making up around 30% of active flying NASA astronauts right now. The gender bias does somewhat arise from child rearing, where the average age of a flying astronaut is 38, so mothers tend to be disadvantaged in the very competitive world of astronaut career advancement should they choose to take some time out. That is the only issue, though. Women and men have had children after flying to space. Various early concerns about menstruation needing gravity to work came to nothing. After all, it's not like women stand upright 24 hours a day. And if there were ever any equivalent concerns about men's sperm losing their way in microgravity, these never got much attention. Men and women's plumbing differences are largely irrelevant. Early on, women managed to adapt to toilets which had been designed for men, and nowadays there is an essentially unisex toilet aboard the International Space Station, with no particular reason for there not having been one there before. To be fair, the initial push by the US to get astronauts into space was gender biased with a purpose, by ensuring astronauts were military personnel and quite often test pilots meant they were people who already had a higher than average risk of dying at work. That said, the Russians seem to be a bit more relaxed about it all, flying both Valentina Tereshkova in 1963, just 2 years after Yuri Gagarin, and Svetlana Savitskaya in 1982, before Sally Ride from the US went up in 1983. Over the course of the astronaut age, there have been 19 in-flight fatalities, with four of those being female, all from the US. This is all tragic, particularly losing the first teacher in space, but none of these deaths, male or female, were absolute showstoppers. So, just because something's dangerous, doesn't mean you should just send men. And a quick aside here. Did you know about the fallen astronaut installation that's on the moon? In 1971, the Apollo 15 crew dropped an apparently unauthorized plaque listing the 14 US and Russian astronauts that had died up to that point in time. The installation includes a 9-centimeter aluminium astronaut figurine lying prone on the ground amongst astronaut footprints in the lunar soil. So, while human beings may be tragically flawed, they still do occasionally shine. And since space exploration seems the best answer to our ongoing existential dilemma about what to do next, we should then be aiming to accommodate the whole of humanity in our space travel plans. A March 2019 plan for the first spacewalk to be conducted by two women had to be cancelled because there weren't enough small-sized spacesuits to accommodate both women. There is some rationale for this, insofar as spacesuits are expensive and take up a lot of storage space, so it's not surprising that the majority are aimed to fit an average-sized person. But this pretty much exemplifies what underlies the whole gender bias issue. If most of the available spacesuits are too big to accommodate female crew, because most spacewalks are done by men, then most spacewalks will continue to be done by men. So it is just a failure to address the requirements of 50% of humanity. As it turned out, a two-woman spacewalk did go ahead in October 2019, where a subsequent female crew member was able to wear a medium-sized spacesuit. The next generation of spacesuits planned for the Artemis missions are expected to be more accommodating of different-sized people and will hopefully get the first woman on the moon. It's about time.